You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Now some words of wisdom this morning. From 1 Kings 19, 9 through 13. At that place, Elijah came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" He answered, "I have been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the Israelites have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they are seeking my life to take it away." He said, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And now from Matthew 25, 31 through 40. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep at his right hand and the goats at the left. Then the king will say to those at his right hand, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you something to drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you? Or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these, who are members of my family, you did it to me." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Being an Indiana farm boy, any Indiana farm boys, girls out there? I'm a very practical person. So I am your conference singles representative. You know the conference has a singles ministry. We just had a retreat last weekend at a big Benedictine monastery. The Single United Methodists had a retreat at the Benedictine monastery. And they had to be quiet. Me too. Well, I was late for one meal, and the father came down and said, "Could you please get your people to be quiet for at least 15 minutes? And I went, "I don't know if we can do that." But we've been there 7 times now, but we have still not learned how to be quiet. But what I do late at night, I leave packets in the mailboxes of all the Methodist churches. It takes me about 2 hours to do the Northeast Valley, 2 hours to do the Northwest Valley. And the first time I tried to get to this congregation, I could not find it. And you know why, don't you? Because 10 years ago, what was your address? What's the name of this street out here? This street right here. No, not the big street, the small street. Bangridge. I could not find that, and I don't have GPS. I went on every street in this city for 2 hours trying to find this church, and I wanted to find it. So that was about midnight. So the next morning I called Dave and I said, "Do you know how hard your church is to find? I can't find this little street on any map." I'm telling you this for a reason. I said, "Maybe your address, David, I'm just suggesting, maybe your address should be on Fountain Hills Boulevard that goes all the way out to Shea." And goes, "Well, that's a good idea, Max." I was shocked. And he went to the post office, and it cost $25 to change it from this street, which no one can find to this day, the side street, as I call it, to a major thoroughfare. So that's what I've done to get people to your congregation, okay? That is my legacy here. And that David listened to an idea of mine on top of it. Well, since my dad was Southern Baptist, is Southern Baptist, my mom was Quaker, bless her heart, she passed this year. I never know which side of me is going to come out when I'm at the altar. How many have been at a Quaker service? What happens at a Quaker service? Silence. Silence. What happens at a Southern Baptist service? Not silence. Not silence. So I always joke, I am the Maverick Methodist, and you put together Quaker and a Southern Baptist, and you get a good Methodist, in my humble opinion. Well, I have stories. I said, David, what are you talking about that you want me to tie in? Of course, he sends greeting from Perth. I remember when he went there for the first time. And I said, you're tied into the lectionary, aren't you, like all good Methodists? And he goes, no. And I've heard rumors that you're a progressive congregation. Is that true? Okay, I just wanted to double check. You know, I'm from a foreign land down in Central Phoenix. But if you don't know who knows who John Wesley is, raise your hand. Oh, you're uncommonly wise then, but for a Methodist church. How many know how many children John's wife's mother had? How many children did she have? 26. 26. So ladies, that meant she was pregnant every year of her childbearing years. I tell you this because Susanna, John's mom, considered herself a woman's feminist, a feminist, because she only had 22 children, okay? Which I also figured she had one set of twins. But John is his mother's son, very progressive for some obvious reasons. And 250 years later, we forget just how progressive John Wesley was. And if you know him and read him, he still is. In fact, I didn't know until about 15 years ago that he was a health nut. And he wrote brochure after brochure on health issues because people didn't have those things. If John Wesley was with us today, he'd be the Dr. Oz of our day. I'm not kidding. You need to read about it because he thought if you're not spiritually well, physically well, it's hard to be spiritually well. But I am a Methodist because I ran across this phrase, and the singles ministries gave me this, so I'm going to see just how good of a Methodist you are. And if you're not Methodist, we love you anyway. That's part of being a good Methodist. So after I read one phrase, you repeat, do all the good you can. By all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. You can. Now, the first time I presented this in front of Central Methodist Church, their huge pulpit, I was scared to death. You know, it's about 20 feet off the ground, the floor, and you're looking out on this huge congregation. And I had the congregation read this three times during the service. And I'll never forget to this day, a young father had his daughter on his hip, you know, like parents do, you know, kind of walking like this. The little girl, ladies and gentlemen, said, I can do that. And I said, what? And I looked at her father. What did she? He said, she can do that. She said that three times. And then I said, how old is she? She's five. And then she said, I'm five. And she understood what this meant at 5 years of age. So I thought John Wesley was on to something. There's nothing, no big theological words in this phrase. So I have taken this to heart, and this is my life motto. And in terms of applying my stories, David told me just to tell my stories, so that's what I'm going to do, and I've had a lot in the past few weeks. But I was a reporter for the Tribune Papers for 22 years, and I covered theater. I went to Fountain Hills Theater, Peter and Noel. I covered them through good and bad. They still speak to me. I just saw them a couple weeks ago. But one thing, that still small voice, you know, Elijah had just seen miracle after miracle. God had spared him after time, after time, after time. And I keep thinking, how many miracles do you have in your life to say, okay, God, I think I get the message. But where does he do after God shows his mighty power? He goes hides in the cliff of a rock. That's where the song Rock of Ages, Cleft for Me, was inspired by this story. As he goes and hides out, thinking, oh, God won't notice him. You know, anybody ever been? I'll just hide somewhere, and God won't notice me, neither will anybody else. So I've done that a few times in my life, particularly when things aren't going well. And I'll, you know, I even snuck in and out of Central Methodist Church for a year before I joined it, hoping no one would see me. I sat in the very back pew, and it worked for a few months. But last week we were trying to move Laura Turner Homes offices and our day program for developmentally disabled adults onto the campus of Faith United Methodist Church. No one's going to live there. We're just like a day school for developmentally disabled adults. Last week, after a two-year fight, 2 years of fighting City Hall, and I read in the paper about all the fun your City Hall is. Phoenix is even more fun, and it was exhausting. It was costly. Some people think it ruined my health, not my sense of humor. And it all got down to, as this prayer, which we just read, said, there were people who did not want developmentally disabled adults in their neighborhood. You know, people with Down syndrome, people with autism, people who are under supervision all day long. And we fought 2 years, and we finally won last Wednesday. Trust me, there are things I'd much rather do, but thank you for your prayers and your support, and your emails made a difference. Well, what gets me about this is Laura Turner was fighting this battle 50 years ago, and we're still fighting it. So here are some experiences that have happened. Miss Turner ordained, there were three Methodist branches of the Methodist Church before World War II, and the only one as they merged to accept their clergy status was what was called the Methodist Protestant Church. And Miss Turner was of that, the Methodist Protestant Church. And they accepted her ordination. So here we have a 1937, the Methodist Church, you know, ordained woman. But of course, where was she sent to? Montana, where no one would know the Methodist Church had a woman pastor, and they were grateful to have any pastor. Anybody here from Montana? So the Civitan Clubs of the Nation support Laura Turner Homes, and they had a convention 4 weeks ago in Pocatello. And I live a full, meaningful life. I don't have a big bucket list to do climb Everest or anything. I just want to get through the day, you know? You know what I mean? But I always wanted to go to these churches where Miss Turner was pastor at a time where females were not pastors. And this is what Miss Turner told me years ago. She passed now 20 years ago. She preached at four churches, and at 3 o'clock, she was assigned, the bishop assigned her to the Montana Home for Feeble-Minded Adults. That's what it was called then. So she would preach at Basin Church at 8:30, the Clancy Church at 10, the East Helena Church at like 11, and then get back to Boulder at 12:30 and then go to this home as where she was the chaplain. And she was not happy with what she found there, but that started her call to serve developmentally disabled. Well, I'm happy to say I took a break from, you know, you're always at a convention, you're looking for a day to go sneak off. And so I was able to hightail it up to Montana, and I went to every church that she had preached at. And lo and behold, one of them was having a potluck picnic for the community. So I got to meet a whole lot of people from 50, 60 years ago. And ladies and gentlemen, you'll not believe this, but the Montana home, the institution, was only closed in June of this year. So it was quite the topic of conversation. They didn't know I was coming. And this is what was, as they took me out to the buildings that were built in 1860, the official name was the Montana Home for Backward Children and Feeble-Minded Adults. Very ancient history. But once again, ladies, who was the people who helped Miss Turner help change things in that environment? The Methodist women's groups. Guys, you're in there driving and painting, but the women are there, you know, in all the way. So she got the women of all these four churches to go to this home and put curtains up and make clothes and the all kinds of things. And Miss Turner never expected to get into this kind of ministry. And folks, this is what she told me. I have it on tape, Max, as I went through all their notices, all their records, on every single record. Now we're talking 57 to 62. Please just let me know when so-and-so dies. Please just let me know when my child dies. Please just let me know when my brother dies. That was the only instructions to the staff of this facility. Now, that was ancient history. Unfortunately, we've come a long way. Well, Miss Turner, at that experience, say, they're going to have a life before they pass. And so she came here to retire the Arizona Training Center. Anybody been to the Arizona? It's in Coolidge. It's the Arizona equivalent for the Home for Feeble-Minded. It is still there. We've been trying to close it for years. Miss Turner became the chaplain there, and that's when she saw the residents from there being sent. They got taxi fare. This was in the mid-60s. They got taxi fare to Tucson or Phoenix, which was $2.50 at the time. So these people who've always lived and dropped off, mostly by families, they'd have one suitcase and $2.50 to start their life on the outside. That was our program. So Miss Turner said, that's not going to happen under my watch. She found the Methodist woman at Central to support her. I was singles director, and guess what? The singles ministry's classroom was next door to Miss Turner's Bible class, started by Twyla Thompson, a great leader in the Methodist Church. But all along, it was always these still small voices nudging Miss Turner, who came to Phoenix to retire. And all the people in Montana said, we never knew what happened to Miss Turner after she left Montana. And our lesson from Lura is she was known best for what she did in her retirement. Her legacy is what she did in her retirement years, because she listened to the still small voice saying, oh, I'm not going to hide out and ignore this problem. So she became mentors to people like David and I, and I never dreamt in a million years that I would be the executive director of Lura Turner Homes. But God had a different way for me, and when I was asked about that, I think going back my Southern Baptist roots, you know, we somehow expect big dramatic moments to change our life around, you know, and sadly some things like happened today, 15 years ago, it takes a huge tragedy to make us reevaluate what we're doing, a loss of a loved one, a divorce, illness, loss of a career that you thought would last you. But it's usually that still small voice that nudges you to action. And that still small voice is usually nudging you when you're in the McDonald's parking lot and someone is asking you for food and money and you're having that moral dilemma. Do I ignore them? Do I have, you know, what do I do? That's not dramatic. That happens to each of us every day. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. I can see all that you do. Well, I believe with all my heart that every single person on earth has a soul. Not everybody believes that, but I believe that with all my heart. And I hope that everything I do and everything we do is helps people to nurture their soul. So here's Central United Methodist, David's home church, where they have a Bible study for developmentally disabled adults. Some can't read, most of them can't read, some of them can't even talk, and as I mentioned earlier, they have a full life. Well, I had a dear senior friend who passed away a few years ago, 3 years ago, and she would go with me on all the visitation of all of our friends from Central Methodist. I'm on the staff of Crossroads. All the people from the singles ministries are in the hospital, and we were just a great buddy team. And I found out, ladies, sometimes we'd go visit in the hospital, and you know, I'd leave the room and they'd tell everything to Olive that they wouldn't tell me. So sometimes I purposely left the room because they needed their lady time together. But after Olive died, I didn't have that buddy. And I had spent a year without my dear friend helping us in ministry, people in care centers and veterans. Well, Barney, who has worked at Denny's for almost 40 years, I calculated he has probably washed 1 million dishes at this time, better than anybody else. Barney prays, and Brenda, a Down syndrome young lady, and they told me I can tell this story. We got a big spray from the Lord Turner Founders Day, and I, being a good Indiana farm boy, do you think I'm going to throw away a $100, $200 spray? It's not going to happen. So I have vases stashed all around the church, and I am no florist. Martha Stewart would not let me pass that. But I do my best to divide these sprays into 10 to 12 vases, and then we take them to people in the hospital or wherever. And I said, Barney, Brenda, would you like to go with me to deliver these flowers? Yes, Mr. Max, yes. You're sure this is what's going to happen? I had never done this before. And many of the people in the care centers knew Barney and Brenda. So I said, well, you're going to give the flowers to the people as we leave and say a little prayer. Well, Barney would touch people on the shoulder. Then Brenda, our prayer warrior, very severely Down syndrome, this is the prayer from two people who some people think have no souls and have no spiritual life, and they're afraid for them to be in their neighborhood. Dear Brenda, this is her prayer. Dear God, send angels to flutter their wings over my mom. Dear God, send angels to flutter their wings over Max's mom to take away the pain. You know what? I never said another prayer after that. She said the perfect prayer. Dear God, send angels to flutter their wings to take away the pain. I don't know where she got that prayer, but it's the perfect prayer. So now Barney and Brenda are in ministry with me, and I'm listening to the still small voice to shut up Max and let Barney and Brenda do the ministry because they're doing much better than I do. Then David reminded us, if we're doing our job, we are bridge builders. I hope we are bridge. I am an advocate and a bridge builder between the community and the DD, those who don't have a voice. I have volunteered at United Methodist Outreach Ministries, they tell me, for 32 years down at downtown, and and I know how involved you all are there. And so 3 weeks ago, I was asked to do a service, a memorial service. I am not a pastor, remind you. I'm not a clergy. I don't have any of those letters behind my name. And a family had asked me to do the service for their loved one, and I said yes. But it turned out the night before, I had to take a member of our church off of life support. At like 8 p.m. in the morning, she had entrusted me with that. And if you've ever done that, I don't know about you, but it's never easy. Anybody know what I'm talking about? It is, it had to be done, it had to be done. Well, that was 9 p.m. on Thursday, and I was to do a memorial service at 9 a.m. on Friday the next morning. This is how I laid in bed all night. I never closed my eyes. And I wasn't nervous about the service. I just was out of it and praying a lot. Well, I live in the inner city, and you haven't lived till you've been at the McDonald's on 7th Avenue in Van Buren till at 6 a.m. Anybody know where that is? 7th Avenue in Van Buren. I thought, if I don't get out of my place, I'm going to fall asleep and not make it to this memorial service. So I know what I'll do. I'll go down to this the most colorful McDonald's in the valley. It's like Times Square at 3 a.m. I was wearing this, my funeral service, or my church look. And it's 6:30, and I've got my Bible, and I'm trying, but I was afraid I would fall asleep at my desk at home if I didn't leave the premises. So I'm studying, trying to get this together. I like McDonald's coffee. I don't like that other company's coffee. And a very well-dressed man came in kind of at the side. I was trying to be invisible in the safest corner of this McDonald's. So I'm in the corner. I've got my Bible, and I go, I think that's Senator Jeff Flake. What is he doing at this McDonald's at 6 a.m. on a Friday morning? So I looked up. It was Senator Jeff Flake, who I've never met, don't know from Adam. He gets his laptop out, and anybody know Senator Flake? You know who I'm talking about? And he's been in the news a lot lately. And so I thought this might be my only chance to ask for money for Laura Turner Homes from the federal government. So my brain is just racing. How do I get my foot in the door here? So I said, Senator Flake, where's your security detail? How's that for an opening line? At least I didn't say, do you always come here or something like that. So he goes, oh, I don't like the security detail. I try to get rid of them whenever I can. Then he went back to his work. Then I noticed nobody in this McDonald's, not even the manager, knew who he was. No one paid him any mind. And he was in a gray silver suit, a magnet for anybody wanting to get money from somebody besides me. I wanted more than a quarter or a breakfast. So I'm going, Senator, how does it feel to be in public and no one knows who you are? You're completely anonymous here. And he goes, well, you know who I am. And I go, I'm not going to say anything. But no one paid him any mind. And then I thought, oh, he must come here because no one knows who he is. But it was Friday, very early on. And again, my brain is racing. What committees is he on in Washington? So, well, if you don't know this, all the shelters, the policies of the shelters that you all serve, they have to leave their campuses at 6 a.m., and they bus them to 7th Avenue and Van Buren. So you know where this is going. So I'm sitting there, and you know, he's a very devout Mormon, lots of children, not as many as Mrs. Wesley, but he's working on it. And I'm reading my Bible, and he's noticed, maybe that's why he sat by me. I was reading, not the Book of Mormon, but I was reading the Bible. And I had a tie on. So the women, and I had been in Pocatello the week before, so the women are walking up, "Mr. Max, where were you last Sunday? We missed you." I didn't even think they knew my name, though I have been there for 32 years. And, "Mr. Max, you didn't serve at da-da," and they just went on. And unfortunately, the one with the most aroma sat to my right, and just is chattering away, "And we didn't get red vines. You always bring red vines, and they forgot the red vines last Sunday." And so I'm having this conversation with Blanche, and then on the left side is Senator Flake. So she kind of moves on, and then Senator goes, "Do you know all these people?" And I said, "Well, actually, Senator, I do." And then we started talking about the homeless ministry and things. So I never did get to Lura Turner Homes, but I was thinking some still small voice. I don't think he'll forget that encounter anytime soon, I'm hoping. And someone said, "Well, you are going to go there at 6 a.m. next Friday, aren't you?" And I go, "Oh, I hadn't thought about that. I need to start making that a habit." But David pointed out, I told this story to David, and how this ended. I was trying not to get political. I knew he'd moved one seat over if I got political. So I said, "Senator Flake, could you use your influence to get Condoleezza Rice to run for the presidency of the United States? I've written her a lot of letters, and she's ignored. I have not heard from any of them." And he kind of smiled, and you all know who Condoleezza Rice is, I think the smartest person in America, though she hasn't responded to my pleas for her to run for the presidency. So this is what he said, "From your mouth to God's ears." So I took that as, he didn't say, "You're crazy, you're out of your mind." So that was the extent to my political discussion and my coffee with Senator Flake. I hope to be continued. But David said, "Max, that's exactly who we're supposed to be. We as Methodists are to be bridge builders." And so for that 20 minutes in the McDonald's, I was building a bridge. Not consciously, but, and by the way, I did get the memorial service done, and I got there on time, but every day those opportunities come up for us, every single day. You don't have to go looking for them. They come to you to serve, and I've gotten braver. I could have just been Elijah and hidden out in that little square, that little cubicle, and go, "I'm not going to talk to that guy. He's one of the most influential men in our state." But it started a dialogue. And for us to bring in a hungry world, we've got to be bridge builders, and no thing is too small in what we do. So I will tell you a story that I have to back up on listening to what I heard on the radio coming in. If I find my story. Being that it is September 11th, on the radio coming here, the long drive from the central city, on NPR, did any of you hear the interview with the CEO of Cantor Fitzgerald? Did any of you hear that an hour ago on the radio? 683 employees of Cantor, remember this, of Cantor Fitzgerald died in the falling and destruction of September 11th. They're trying to interview him, and he's so choked up, he just here it is 15 years later, and he still can't talk. Can you imagine? He was a CEO. You lose 683 of your employees on the same day and that terrible thing. So the interviewer an hour ago said, well, so what did you do the next day? What was your September 12th like? Well, that's a great question. But he answered, our team, what was left of us, I said, you know, we can just close the business. We've lost 9/10 of our employees. We can close our business, or the 9/10 of our employees have families who need us to carry on our work and our jobs so they can pay their rent and send their kids to school. So, team, what do you want to do? Do you want to close our business, or are we going to carry on? Now, this is just 24 hours, which in finance is a lot of time. And his team carried on. And then he closed the program. I don't know how you could, I just can't imagine. He said, we all just wanted to go home and get under the covers and stay under the covers for months like we all did. Now every September 12th, all the money they earn on September 12th still goes towards the survivors, the families of that. And I think he said last year they raised $12 million on one day. So is that bridge building? Is that responding to a catastrophe that will forever live in our minds as the worst day of our lives? So I close with this story. I took in a homeless man to live in my little tiny apartment. He slept on the couch. And Central Methodist had a mission project in Mexico. And David was a plumber and an electrician. And if you've been on a mission project, you need those. So, and I was going to house sit in North Scottsdale. So I left on a Friday. The mission team was to pick him up on a Sunday. They couldn't get him to come to the door, and they went on down to Mexico without him, which I did not know. I come home a week later, and I find David dead in my apartment. And he had been dead for over a week, and I did not know this. And this was not a good day in my life. And everything from the county wouldn't let me go further into the house because they thought it was the West Nile virus. And then the police thought there had been foul play on my part, which really drove me absolutely crazy. And so on the year of his anniversary, the Singles Ministries, we go to New York every 2 years. We were there in May of 2001. But I could never find the John Street United Methodist Church. Anybody been to the John Street United Methodist Church? It's two blocks away from the towers, and it was not damaged on 9/11. And I was determined to find this church. But if you've been to Lower Manhattan, you know how the streets are a crazy quilt of streets. And I had tried numerous times. Well, we always, when I take my groups of people there, I want them to visit the Methodist churches, and the John Street Methodist Church is the oldest one, 1766, the oldest continuously operating Methodist church in the valley. So I will read in the country. I will read my story in closing. The World Trade Center's giant scar was the last place on earth I wanted to be the 1st of August, 2003. Why? Mostly because it was the first anniversary of finding my roommate dead in my apartment a week after his death. My emotions were raw, so raw that I had convinced myself that this trip to New York City just happened to have fallen a year to the date of that traumatizing discovery. I really was just scouting hotels and side trips for a group tour the next May. It really was just a coincidence. I happened to be 2,000 miles away from my Phoenix home on the first anniversary date of that soul-wrenching week. just a coincidence. I kept going over and over in my mind. However, I had no choice but to go to Lower Manhattan. I had to find John Street United Methodist Church. I had scoured the Wall Street area in vain several times, and this trip I was determined to find it so my tour group could see it in 2004. Being familiar with Manhattan's southern tip, I planned my walk to avoid Ground Zero at all cost. I just wasn't ready to deal with the realities of September 11th firsthand, and certainly not on that week, and certainly not alone. But God had other plans. Before I knew it, I had made a wrong turn, and there as I was, standing on the corner of Church and Vesey Streets near that great gaping hole where the Twin Towers had once stood. Try as I might, I could not turn away. Having been a reporter for 22 years, the journalist in me took over, and in an instance, I was consumed with people watching. And one by one, two by two, group by group, I was fixated as hundreds of people stopped in their tracks on Church Street and they approached the site where the towers fell. Silence, a still small voice, reigned as the curious tiptoed closer and closer to the fence separating them from that mammoth pit that had become a mass grave for thousands on September 11th. While steeled by years of reporting, I was sure I could prevent myself from getting emotionally involved with this heart-tugging experience. I was wrong. I too found myself edging closer to the fence with this inexplicable reverence and awe, as if it was a chain link veil between the Holy of Holies and us mere mortals. I grabbed the fence as if holding on for dear life, and I let down my guard. Ever so slowly, I let in the depth of that evil and the scope of that death and destruction that day that will live in infamy for all of us. Then, as now, you cannot not respond. So I closed my teary eyes and I started whispering the Lord's Prayer, just our Father. And suddenly, I felt a hand on my shoulder. And I looked over, and it was that tender touch belonged to a middle-aged black man who joined me in saying the prayer that the Lord taught his disciples. And in no time, others started chiming in, ladies and gentlemen. And before I knew it, all up and down the fence, people were saying, complete strangers were saying the Lord's Prayer with me, praying in unison, having a holy moment at the height of the hustle and bustle on the Wall Street workday. Hard-headed as I am, God's lesson was not lost on me. I was being like Jonah. I ended up in the very place I did not want to go for spiritual help. Then, in the middle of one of the most secular cities on earth, I lifted up my grief about the homeless roommate, and I lifted up my grief to God and let it go for good. I just let it go. Things like that aren't supposed to happen in New York's financial district. Guess you could call it a miracle on Wall Street. As I looked out over Ground Zero, a God-sent chorus, ladies and gentlemen, filled my head. It still fills my head. The mad men have not won. The mad men have not won. That just keeps going through my brain. And they haven't. God is in control, I thought, as I knocked on the door of the John Street United Methodist Church, a few short blocks from where the Twin Towers fell. This baby-faced Indiana pastor on Wall Street opened the door and welcomed me in. And seeing my dazed face and my tears, he offered, "You've been to Ground Zero, haven't you? And I nodded yes, saying it wasn't what I expected, but that I had found what I was looking for. Indeed, I had. Healing came to my grief-sick soul in that glass and still valley of death, the last place on earth I had expected to find comfort and lasting peace. Well, the past every 2 years when the Singles Ministries of the Conference goes to New York, we go to St. Paul's Church. Has anybody been there to the memorial? And you will see them all day long today, photos. They have done such an incredibly correct job of remembering what happened that day. And you cannot not get involved. But what I do at the church, the St. Paul's Church, which somehow survived and became the healing ground for there, I gather the singles group in the on the west side of that church, and we gather hands and we just start singing "Let There Be Peace on Earth." No one has stopped us from doing that. And guess what? Other people come and join us and sing. And some of the group, "Max, you sure are brave." And I said, "No, I don't. This is the least we can do." So as we move into our singing time and closure, I hope you remember each and every one of you are a bridge builder between the high and the lowly, between a cruel world to making our corners of the world safe. And I particularly appreciate how you help me with the Laura Turner Homes. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information on our faith community or to support this outreach with a donation, be sure to visit us online at www.reachtouchteach.com.